Hi, and welcome to another 3X interrogation. Now today I have the pleasure of interviewing a friend of mine. His name is Tim Schmidt. Now I'm going to give you a little bit of background, Tim, why I'm on the call with me today. But before I do that, just wanted to say one of the reasons why I've asked him to do this interview is him and I have, you know, have some very similar beliefs, you know, about men, you know, how they're being feminized in the media, television, you know, pretty much everywhere you look. So we're going to discuss that. We're also going to discuss, you know, what it is to be a man, men being men. And, of course, we're not going to be able to avoid it. We're going to be talking a little bit about some self-defense. We both have backgrounds in self-defense, both very different, but they're there. So we're going to discuss that a little bit, men protecting their families, you know, friends, themselves, all of it. So that's kind of what we're going to be discussing today. So I just want to give you a little bit of background on him so you kind of have a little bit of a context of why he is on this call. Tim is the founder and he's the CEO of United States Concealed Carry Association, which is the ultimate resource for armed citizens and has over 27,000 members, you know, all across America. They've served well over 50,000 customers with their self-defense information and products. So they're helping out a lot of people, you know, be safe, protect themselves, protect their families. And he's also the president of Delta Media LLC, which is they're a publisher. Delta Media publishes Concealed Carry Magazine, along with numerous other self-defense, you know, related products, reports, DVDs. I mean, you name it. They're putting out good content to help people as far as like with protection, whether handguns, and there's other stuff as well. So, just an example. I think a couple of the things that they put out: 107 plus handgun accuracy secrets, as well as how to detect lies and liars, and how to transform fear into a powerful ally. That one jumped out at me, Tim. I thought that one was pretty cool. And then, you know, also on top of all that, Tim is also a husband. He's a father of three. You know, so he's got a lot on his plate. So he definitely, if you haven't noticed, I like to interview guys that are you know, not only out there doing cool stuff, helping other guys out, but you know, that are really, you know, really pushing the limits. So, you know, they're really having to step up. And, you know, I mean, really be a man, like, so guys that are having to balance a lot of things. And, you know, so I'm really excited to have Tim on this call today and appreciate it, Tim. Did I leave anything out?
No, Nathan, I think you got it all, man. And it's a pleasure to be here. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you, man. I really appreciate it as well. So now let's jump right into what I initially mentioned. You know, I want to talk about what it is to be a man, you know, especially, you know, in this day and age when, I mean, you know, you watch commercial after commercial where men are being made to look like dumb, you know, slow idiots. You know, they're the butt of jokes by women. You know, the media is constantly depicting guys, you know, and kind of almost, you know, telling them that they need to have more feminine characteristics if they want to actually attract the opposite sex, if they want to be able to succeed. I mean, it's, you know, I could go on forever. So, I mean, you know, let's start there. You know, What do you think it is to be a man, Tim?
I'll tell you. I mean, when you mentioned that during the introduction, I really had to smile a little bit because, I mean, you're dead on. And I guess before I answer that question, what it is to be a man, to me, I honestly think it's the guy's fault. You know, so many guys will say, oh, you know, these women are feminizing us. That's BS. The problem is that women are needing to be more manly and thus feminizing men because men aren't stepping up to be the man they're supposed to be. I mean, at least that's what I think. And, I mean, I personally believe that a man is, his job is to provide and to protect. I mean, it's as simple
Absolutely.
As that.
Absolutely. You know, I mean, I mean, you're giving me, like, I actually got goosebumps when you said that about men needing to be men and, like, step up and actually, you know, in a sense, be good leaders. Because, I mean, what happens when somebody's not taking responsibility or doing something, there's a void, and that void gets filled, and the women are having to fill that void.
Exactly, and it's not the women's fault; it's the men's fault. It's the men not being the men they're supposed to be, and these poor women have to fill in. So that's I'm putting the blame smack on us, not me.
Yeah,
personally.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's all your fault, Tim. What are you going to do about it?
So yeah, it's really too bad. And the neat thing is I mean, the way that nature works is I mean, men are designed to be the hunter gatherer slash, you know, provider protector. That's just the way it's supposed to be. And I mean, some of you may start, you know, rolling your eyes thinking that sounds very old fashioned. But I'll tell you, man, that's just, I mean, I mean, there's nothing wrong with helping out with the family and doing somewhat domesticated stuff. But when it gets right down to it, I mean, if you're going to be a man, you provide and you protect. End of story.
Absolutely. So let's take it a little bit deeper. Like, what do you think what do you think the characteristics of a guy, of a man's man should be these days? Like, you know, we've talked about the hunter gatherer, you know, protector of the family. What else should a guy be thinking about? You know, even if they don't have a family, you know, what are the kind of characteristics that they should be, molding in themselves?
I think that's a great question. I think the most important would be simply personal responsibility. I mean, as a man, and I'm not saying that women don't have to have personal responsibility, but from a male man perspective, if you haven't gotten to the point where you have your own children and a family, I mean, you need to be responsible for every aspect of your life, and you can't depend on your parents or your friends or the government to do anything for you, because you're the guy. And essentially, at this stage in your life, when you don't have some of those external responsibilities, you know, this is the point that is kind of a proving ground to help you to turn into that man that you need to be, so that you can accept those big responsibilities. So for me, I mean, personal responsibility is huge. I mean, my dad made me pay for my own college. Not that he didn't have the money, because I think he did, but he just wanted me to teach me how to suck it up a little bit.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So basically being accountable for what you do, the actions you take, you know, the way you live, et cetera.
Exactly. Yep, that's a huge one. Certainly, I'm a big fan of chivalry, you know. And again, I hate to sound too old-fashioned. Your members are probably going to be thinking, Nathan, where'd you get this 70-year-old man?
Yeah.
but seriously, being chivalrous is a manly thing to do. And when I mean, chivalry, in case some of your listeners don't even know what that means, it essentially means having respect for all women, you know, holding mm-hmm. holding a door open for another woman, even a stranger, or opening a door for a car, or helping a woman who may be a stranger who may need help on the side of the road. Kind of that, you know, that Boy Scout mentality. That for me, that's another aspect of what a true man is.
That definitely makes sense. I mean, I guess there could be a distinction made, you know, in chivalry, where I think a lot of guys, you know, especially for the single guys, they probably, you know, if they are kind of feeling kind of bewildered about the opposite sex and how to approach them, or like, you know, things in that, you know, around that, like, you know, opening a door, you know, helping somebody, you know, they drop something, or, you know, whatever it is, stopping and helping somebody put a car tire on, mm-hmm. you know, shouldn't be confused with, you know, like almost like false flattery.
Right.
Like something that's disingenuous, where they're, you know, they're just, you know, they're, I don't quite know how to explain it, but maybe it's just, you know, they're just out there, you know, in a place, and they're just, you know, trying to be nice to women.
Mm-hmm.
Versus, you know, like, you know, a situation where, like, you truly can be, like, chivalrous.
I think I know what you're getting at, Nathan. I think the big difference there is that, I mean, chivalry is truly an act where you're just you're not expecting anything in return, whereas possibly what you're getting at is yeah, you know, maybe false flattery for maybe a different, you know, you're looking for some sort of a quid pro quo type thing.
Right.
And that's, you're right. It's a completely different distinction. So, yeah.
All right, so we've got chivalry, personal responsibility or accountability. What else, Tim? I mean, I know this is an amazingly broad question, so
yes, I would say, you know, and again, this, you know, this is kind of another broad statement, but just, you know, being a leader. I mean, a man is a true man is a leader, and he leads by example, and not just most people, when they think of leadership, they think of business and maybe social community type things. But I mean, but everything, you know, if you're out with a group of people and you know, some of your buddies start screwing around and doing things that maybe you won't be proud of in the future. I mean, sometimes all it takes is just somebody to be the leader and say, you guys, what the heck are we doing? This is ridiculous.
Yeah.
So, you know, so there's another good trait of what I would consider a man. You know, not a guy that's not afraid to stand up and say, hey, let's think about what we're doing here.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. I think I've even experienced this with myself. It's like, you know, you kind of sometimes, you know, almost just want to go for go with the flow, because it's easier. It's like you almost think that's what people want, but what people really truly are looking for is somebody that does have a clear vision of who they are, what they're doing, and where they're going.
Oh, Nathan, that's so true. And I mean, honestly, I mean, our society is just starving for leaders. And I think you'll be amazed, each one of your listeners will be amazed in their own circle of friends when if they maybe in the past weren't in any sort of a leadership position, if you stand up confidently and start asserting yourself, you'll be amazed at how, you know, people want to follow.
Right.
they just do. So.
Yeah, it's funny too, like the whole leadership thing. I think lots of times people when they see somebody, because I think there's, you know, there seems to be like a an extreme today. There's guys who are almost like overly like male, like way over the top, like kind of like run people over. And I think lots of times people like they I don't know if they necessarily see them as leaders,
mm-hmm.
but like lots of times, you know, they're almost in like work environments or, you know, I don't know, in your certain clique or whatever. Or your group of friends, like, you know, you have people like that, and you follow them just almost because you kind of have to, or you're going to get run over.
I know exactly what you're talking about, and that's another distinction that I didn't really touch on before. I mean, there's a huge difference between what I would call a male and a man, and a man is what I like to consider a gentle giant. You know, the kind of person, and not necessarily a physical giant, but a man is the guy who has the piercing self-confidence, but at the same time understands the power that, you know, that he has, and he's an approachable leader, and he's a friendly, nice person, but he probably has the skills necessary to kill you in a moment's notice.
Right.
I mean, I don't mean to go over the top there, anybody can just be a testosterone-raged male.
Yeah, and, absolutely.
And honestly, that's an abuse of that, because I mean that's not good. So
I mean, I guess as men, we should be seeking a balance between, you know, really taking accountability for the things that we do, you know, not like running away from those accountabilities or putting the blame elsewhere, you know, chivalry. Really truly understanding what it is to be a leader and obviously, you know, recognizing the distinction between being some macho punk, mm-hmm. That, you know, just arrogant, runs people over, but also at the same time being aware of, you know, not being, being overly, you know, feminine to the point to where, like, you know, you kind of lose the masculinity that what it is that makes you a man.
Exactly. And so much of what we're talking about is there's I would say half of it is a mental or it's like a mental distinction. I mean, you can, you know, we're not necessarily talking about the way a person looks, but more accurately, we're really talking about a way a person thinks and behaves.
Right.
And just one other aspect I'll throw in, and I think will probably really resonate with your customers, is that a real man takes care of their body. And there's nothing wrong with bodybuilding and getting in shape and getting and strong, et cetera. But the whole purpose of doing that should be to respect your body and to keep it in good physical condition so that you can do all of that providing and protecting.
Yeah, it is kind of hard to do that when you can barely get up the stairs.
Outside, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, it's funny. I was talking to a guy this morning, and you were talking about, like, you know, when you start hitting that certain age, like, things aren't quite as easy as they used to be, and and, you know, it's like, you know, you actually do have to actually make an effort to maintain that level Because I mean, I guess the fact of the matter is, it's like a lot of us don't ever have these situations happen.
Mm-hmm.
But like as an example, when my dad was, oh man, what was I? Third grade? I think it was third grade. So my dad was probably like in his he was probably 40, 41. He was trying to actually be helpful to another man who needed a ride, and against his better judgment, because he was in a hurry, he gave the guy a ride,
mm-hmm.
and the guy pulled out a huge knife on him.
Oh, jeez!
In the car, and make a long story short, the guy was a big, strong dude, and my dad, fortunately was it was a guy who he was more of a marathon runner type guy, but he took care of his body, as an athletic guy, and he ended up getting into a wrestling match with this guy inside the car trying to wrestle the knife away so that he didn't die.
Oh my gosh.
Because the guy who did try and actually, try and take his life. And fortunately, he was able to do that. Because because even though he wasn't protecting us in that situation, if he hadn't have been physically capable of at least getting away, because he actually didn't engage like in an actual fight. It was purely just self-defense. Like, okay, I'm going to get away from this guy. Like, he started wrestling, and when he realized he couldn't actually overpower the guy,
mm-hmm.
he had to jump out of the car, fell in a ditch, and as the guy came running around the side of the car to try and jump on top of him to stab him, like, my dad kicked him in the chest and then got up and, like, literally, grease lightning sprinted down the road. And fortunately, there was a man that was too old to actually help him, but he was sitting in a truck and waiting for my dad to see if he got away, and then gave him a ride to help him get out of there. But if my dad hadn't have been at least in reasonable condition, I mean, he'd have been a dead man, and then there would have been my mom left with three boys to raise, and the oldest was in third or fourth grade at the time.
Oh my, that's an amazing story. Gosh.
So I mean, that was kind of just kind of like as an example of a very functional reason why guys should stay in shape, because it hopefully will never happen, and odds are it won't. But I mean, those things do happen, unfortunately.
Exactly, and I think you bring up a great point there, Nathan, in that statistically, you probably won't be a victim of a crime. And,
yeah.
But I guess my motto that I like to live by is prepare for the worst, or expect the best, but prepare for the worst. And in essence, what that does for you is it in that process of preparing for the worst, but at the same time you're truly thinking about the best. It really enhances all aspects of your life. And
yeah,
and so
I agree.
Here you are. You're preparing for something that'll probably never happen, but the repercussions of all of that and every other aspect of your life they just improve your life tremendously. So it's certainly worthwhile to pursue all these principles we're talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think this is a good time to segue over to kind of talk a little more about the self defense stuff. But
sure.
Right before we do that, I want to ask you one more question, and it's just kind of just touching lightly back on the what it is to be a man. I'm just curious, like who are kind of the guys that you've looked up to, like and the guys that when you looked at them and you're like, wow, I wanna be like that guy. He actually almost like in a sense watching him, seeing what he does in his life, like empowers me. Like, and kind of, and what were the characteristics of that person?
Oh, wow, that's a pretty deep question. If I had to pick one person, I would probably have to, I'll have to admit this is a little bit off guard, but I would say Colonel Jeff Cooper.
Colonel Jeff Cooper. Okay.
Yeah.
Why?
He's a guy who lived his life. He's a pillar in the firearms and self-defense community. He died just 2 years ago, and he's written a tremendous amount of books. He pioneered many aspects of self-defense and firearms fighting technique. But the thing that made me connect and admire him the most is that he was a guy that just said what he thought and didn't give a rip what anybody else thought.
Yeah,
he was a man of his convictions, and he. And I guess that was probably the biggest one, and most of his convictions are dead on with what I agree with in terms of what it is to be a man, and and what it is to be a provider and a protector, and in the face of tremendous opposition, he always stuck to his guns.
You know, that's awesome. It is. I guess because just what you're saying makes me think about the guys that I've looked up to, and literally I really want to be like him. You know, like the way that people respond to him, and like what he does in his life. Because when you see someone that truly does have conviction and believes in what they're doing, and like they live by like a standard that, you know, it, you know, obviously they have like standards of their own, but like it's almost like they're living by like a higher code.
Mm-hmm.
You're just drawn to them. Like they're out there doing it, and then people just, you know, they see that, and it's like, you know, I'm sure anybody listening to this, they could probably think of a few people in their life, mm-hmm, that, you know, same exact thing.
And honestly, Nathan, you know, I mean, you bring up a great point, and that it's important to have role models like that, because you know, it's a great way to improve yourself, you know. And
mm-hmm.
I mean, you're right. I mean, people like Jeff Cooper, and they attract, like, you know, they attract people like moths to a light, man. It's just good stuff.
Yeah, that's awesome. So yeah, so anybody listening, I definitely encourage you to think about that. Maybe even, you know, and if you don't have anybody like that, maybe look around you and see who it is that you actually really, really admire. But I think a second ago we were talking about, I think now would be a good time to kind of talk a little bit about the self-defense things. When I first started thinking about us having this conversation, it was, a lot of it actually came from an article that I came across that freaked me out a little bit, talking about how, like, actually, you know, men actually are really the main target of gun crimes. And, you know, like, it just got me thinking about how criminals think, you know, what are they looking for? How do they choose their victims? You know, and like you said before, odds are no one's ever going to be the victim of, you know, victim of a crime. But, you know, like, what are the kinds of crimes that are typically planned out, you know, in advance, you know, do the people that, you know, enact these crimes, like, is it just random? Like, do they pick people just walking down the street? You know, I mean, what all does that entail?
Yeah, that's a good question. And before I just dive right into that, I just like to say this, Nathan, and that is that, I mean, you're right in that statistically, most people on this call or listening to this will never be involved in a violent crime, and that's the good news.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I guess the point that I'll just make is that, you know, I'll probably never be in a deadly car accident, or I'm probably not going to die before I'm an old man. But I mean, I spend a tremendous amount of money on insurance because it just might happen. So I mean, there's nothing wrong with preparation. And you're not paranoid if you think about stuff like this, and if you prepare, you're just being responsible. So with that being said, that's kind of like my disclaimer, so that people don't say, "Man, that guy's a real paranoid."
Yeah,
I just say, "No, I'm just prepared."
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, there's two main kind of criminals. There's the premeditator, and there's the impulse criminal. And the premeditator is usually a person with a sociologic disorder, essentially a psychotic, psychopath. And these people are the people you don't want to mess with. They're very difficult to defend against and avoid unless you have extremely elaborate personal self-defense systems. But the good news is that unless you're a person that's very famous, or you're a person that has a tremendous amount of enemies, you're probably never going to run into one of these premeditators. Almost most crime that people are going to be exposed to are impulse criminals. Now, you know, the term impulse kind of makes you think random. Well, in actuality, it's not as random as you think, and that's where it actually is good, because it makes it relatively easy to avoid this, because these impulse criminals are your typical, you know, your gangbangers, your people who are, you know, crack addicts that need to, you know, come up with a couple hundred dollars really, really fast before they, you know, start tweaking pretty bad.
And, you're right.
And the thing that these people are really good at, these impulse criminals, is that they can smell fear, and they can spot victims. They're very good at it because they do it all the time. And so essentially what you need to do is you need to figure out how not to look like a victim. and you'll be fine.
Now that's really interesting. Yeah, no, absolutely. So what are some of the things that guys maybe they do it every day, maybe they don't do it at all, but like what are some of the things that guys are doing with maybe without even knowing it that could actually, you know, make them a target?
Well, there's a whole bunch of things, and again, this is a positive thing because what we're dealing with is a continuum of I guess victimhood in the sense that, you know, you don't have to be perfect at every discipline of not looking like a victim. You just have to be better than the next guy.
Gotcha.
You know, kind of like, you know, if you're getting chased by a bear, you don't have to be faster than the bear. You just have to be faster than your buddy, which is kind of a bad analogy, but.
Like the two guys run away from the bear. Right. One sits down, puts the shoes on. He's like, "Hey, I just have to outrun you."
Exactly, exactly. Which I mean, I guess yeah, that does sound kind of bad, but probably the biggest mistake that your typical guy makes is that they have a very poor awareness discipline.
Okay.
And when I say that, again, that mentor of mine, Colonel Cooper, he came up with this awareness color code system that really does a good job of explaining. You know, how you should, you know, treat your own personal awareness. So there's like four different colors. The first one is white, the next one is yellow, the next one is orange and red. The white is what I like to refer to as la-la land. And believe it or not, in fact, you probably will believe this, but most people exist in condition white, meaning
okay.
that they are completely oblivious to everything. I mean, if you just walk down a busy street in any city and just look around and look at people, you know, jabbering on their cell phones and listening to their iPods completely out in the public and you know, and just not paying attention to anything, I mean, these people are in white zone. They're walking down the street with their head down, not keeping eye contact. Another good test is, you know, how many times have you been driving down the road and you come up to an intersection, and this is like, you know, the street you always drive on. And if I were to ask you, you know, hey, Nathan, we just came to a four-way stop and there were three cars, you know, can you name the color of any of them?
Right.
And you probably wouldn't be able to do it.
Probably not.
Because, your mind was 9 million miles away. And,
yeah.
And again, you know, you don't have to be this paranoid nut job, who's like a military sniper making little sketches of everywhere they go. All you have to do is learn to live in what's called a yellow, which is just a slightly heightened awareness level, meaning you're just aware of your surroundings. And if you do this for 30 days and just live in this condition yellow,
uh-huh.
you'll just get used to it. And essentially what you're going to do is you're practically going to eliminate any potential situation that could ever be dangerous because you'll be able to see it coming a mile away.
So you'll just become more, it'll almost become part of like you'll kind of like in a sense have kind of like an alert system. You'll start to notice when things are a little bit off around you.
Exactly. And it's really, it's actually a fun thing to do. And like I said before, you know, once, if you just practice it, you know, after you do it for 30 days, you won't even have to think about it anymore. And so, okay, let me just continue on this spectrum here. So the next one is orange. And now the condition orange is really, it's a condition that the only people that are ever in this condition are the people that are smart enough to be in condition yellow. Because you can only get to orange by knowing what's going on.
Uh-huh.
And orange is essentially where you're in the mode of fight or flight preparation. Meaning like, ooh, I can, you know, something's off here. Like that guy is looking at me funny or I can sense something is not right. So now you have the luxury of being able to decide, okay, what the heck am I going to do?
Right.
And your body has yet to experience any adrenaline dump. So you're thinking clearly. You have good motor skills. You can actually, you know, you can make a decision. The final stage is the red stage, which is essentially full blown fight or flight. That's when your body dumps an unbelievable amount of adrenaline in your system, and you get tunnel vision, and your hands feel like canoe paddles. unfortunately for most people, they go from white right to red because they never saw anything coming. And so anyway, so back to the whole criminal thing, these impulse criminals, man, I mean, they can spot a sheep or a potential victim a mile away. And they'll take them from white to red, they're screwed.
I guess it's all, I mean, you can almost even compare it to, I mean, women immediately spot guys that are completely that have no confidence, that are weak. So criminals almost in a sense, like, they just have that radar up. They just see it immediately.
Exactly. Yeah. And truly, it is a radar thing. You're walking down the street, and if you're thinking to yourself, or if you've just practiced that the concept of living in that yellow awareness mode, you know, you're putting out a vibe, and these guys see that, and they look at you, and they think, oh man, I don't want to mess with that guy, because maybe you're a small person, but nonetheless, you know, you're putting out that vibe that, you know, he could be trouble. They'll go find somebody else.
Yeah, because in a sense they're just like, predators, certain predators that they only go after, what's going to be the easiest meal. I mean, they're just wired that way.
Exactly. On so many levels, these impulse criminals are not very smart because of the fact that they are criminals.
Right.
But there's a few areas where they are experts. And they don't want to get hurt. And they also, unfortunately, there's just so many potential victims to choose from that all you got to do is practice a few of these fundamentals, and you honestly, you'll be fine. So,
well, that's very interesting. I'd never really quite thought about that way before, but I mean, that's in the sense you are. I mean, you're out doing your thing, you're running your errands, or you're in X place, and you're thinking about, you know, what you have to do at the office, or like, oh, I want to go to the gym later, but I got to do this first, or you just got off the phone with your wife, and she needs all of this stuff, or your girlfriend, and then next thing you know, something happens, and bang, you don't even have a chance to really truly think through the situation.
Exactly, yeah. And there's so many neat little. I mean, there's so many aspects that this can come into your life. For example, like when my wife and I will go out to dinner, and we'll go to a restaurant, and they'll seat us down, and my wife always knows that I want to have my seat, or I want my chair to be with a back to the wall, or preferably in a corner, so that, I mean, that's the best position if some crazy stuff happens.
You're right.
And it also allows you to, I mean, it allows you to see people coming up upon you, you know, and the last thing I want is, you know, from my back to the crowd, and anybody can just come up and sneak up on me, and again, you know, I'm starting to sound paranoid here, but it's not that difficult to say, hey, sweetheart, I'd like to sit with my back to the wall, and most women will think, wow, this guy's, he's taking care of me, you know?
Yeah, he's looking out, something goes weird.
Exactly, yeah, and they appreciate that fact that you know, I'm dating, or I'm married to a real man who doesn't talk about this that much, but I can tell just by subtle things that he does that he's always looking out for me. And so, I mean, and I kind of got off on your question, but you said, what are some of the things that guys do? I mean, it's just acting, you know, acting like a victim. It's, walking down the street with your head down and with your mind a mile away. I mean, you can actually get pretty good at still thinking about other things, but still keeping that heightened awareness.
Right.
I really don't think it's smart to talk on your cell phone in public areas where, you know, people can have easy access to you. I mean, if you're sitting in the corner of a restaurant on your cell phone, hey, no problem, because you can see people coming upon you. But if you're, you know, if you're just walking down the street, I would never talk on my cell phone walking down the street or listen to an iPod, because, I mean, that just screams, holy cow, this guy is completely oblivious to his surroundings. So those would be two things. And then probably the third biggest thing is just the aura of the confidence that you project. A consciously confident person projects subconsciously. Does that make sense?
Right. So. Yeah, it does. Absolutely. Yeah, no, it's the same thing as, you know, I mean, I'm not trying to purposely go back to like saying women are like criminals, but it's like, you know, I mean, just looking at from what I've, you know, learned about just guys that are confident and like the kind of image you project, like when you're very, very confident, like people see it.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I mean, people can tell when, yeah. So, and it's just interesting the correlation there. Now, I want to actually go through like a particular scenario here. There's something that actually happened to somebody that I knew or know. They actually were going somewhere, and you know, let's say, you know, like they were walking down the street, and they actually had like three people start following them, like three guys. And, like, he actually did notice it. Like, he noticed that he was being followed, and he changed the side of the street. And he actually ended up doing it, like, more than once. And, like, both times, eventually, they came back over to the side of the street he was on. So I'm just curious, like, you know, what are – fortunately, like I said, he noticed this. What are, like, you know, like, so if this was happening to you, you know, what are your options? Like, what would you – kind of, like, what would you be doing, like, strategically and mentally, you know, trying to, you know, head this off? And, you know, do you have a process for staying calm and, like, focused?
Yeah. I guess, first of all, before I answer this, I would say that, and I mean, no offense to your friend, but I mean, was this like late at night or was this during the day or?
It was later in the night.
Okay. Yeah. I guess I really question, I mean, it's not that difficult to avoid situations like that. I mean, but nonetheless, let's say that there are some, you know, extreme extenuating circumstances and you did find yourself in that situation. You know, the first thought you need to think of is, and honestly, a lot of this stuff you need to have thought out ahead of time.
Uh-huh.
For example, you know, what I mean by that is the last thing you want to do is find yourself in a situation that you haven't at least thought through a few times. Because, you know, then it's going to be very difficult to control that adrenaline response that you cannot, you know, that's going to happen. So the first thing that you want to do is you want to start going through an evaluation of whether, you know, at some point you're going to come to a point where you're either going to decide I can get out of this or I'm going to have to actually engage. So your friend, you know, once he realized that, holy cow, there's three guys following me, it's 3-on-1, I'm assuming he probably wasn't armed. And
no.
So, and even that, you know, having a gun is not always a, you know, this magical tool that makes all your problems go away. But, you know, still a three-on-one fight is not something you really want to be involved in. So your friend should just continually to evaluate. Okay, are these guys, are they closing in on me? I mean, he doesn't know. Maybe they're just three guys messing around trying to scare somebody. But eventually, as they get closer, if they continue to get closer and closer, you need to start to plan and visualize your attack, and really, you know, at that point of, you know, of engagement, you know, if they're closing in on you, you have to already have in your head exactly what you're going to do. And, you know, fighting 1-on-3 is, gosh, I mean, there's no positive outcome in that. You're going to get hurt.
Right.
And I guess, and again, this, you know, we've already moved past the fact that you've already gone through the thinking that, okay, I can't outrun these guys, because that would be your first option. You definitely want to try to just get the heck out of there and try to run to some sort of safety.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even if you were Chuck Liddell and you were a trained mixed martial artist, you know, a street fight with three guys, God knows what weapons they have. I mean, man, that's not anything you want to be a part of.
No way. No way.
So do you want me to get into, you know, exactly what you do in a 3-on-1 type fight, or?
You know what? I mean, that I'd actually be interested to hear what would be kind of the approach to that? Because I mean, I'll admit I've never been on a 3-on-1 fight.
Well, I mean, the only approach is okay. Back to the whole Cooper color thing. Assuming that you've been smart enough to pick up on this on the fact that there's three guys closing in on you. Now you've gone from yellow to orange. You're evaluating. Okay, I can't get out of this because maybe they're already, you know, running towards you and maybe you're on a really long country road and there's nowhere to go, and you finally come to the realization that, holy cow, you know, there's going to be a confrontation. So now what you want to do is these three guys, you know, right at the engagement point, you've already decided that you're in a fight for your life, and most likely they'll engage you, three guys head on, unless, I mean, if they start to surround you, then you're pretty much screwed. But most likely they'll probably engage you three abreast. First thing you're going to want to do is unless they say something like, oh, hey, man, you know, I'm your buddy from high school and I recognize you, which probably isn't the case. The first thing you want to do is you're going to want to get on either the right or the left flank so that you can attack just one at a time. And you're going to want to attack that guy with everything you've got. And, and go from condition, just be in condition red, and I mean, fight for your life, and realize that you're probably going to get hurt, and if they have bad intentions, I mean, it's not good, man. It's not a situation you want to be in. But the only way to fight three guys at once is to either go to the left or the right, and to just attack once, so the other two can't get you at the same time, and hope that you're able to you know, maim that first guy really fast, so that the other two think, oh man, this guy actually knows how to fight. So.
And then maybe that's when you try and, you know, just bug out of there again. If maybe the first time it wasn't successful, to try and outrun the guys.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, like, you know, just kind of. Exactly. Yeah. You try to just quickly mess up the first guy. You know, like maybe an elbow to the throat and book.
Now, have you ever not necessarily had a situation like this, but have you ever had a situation where you felt like something was off like that? Maybe you were with your family or.
The closest situation I've had was I was in Washington, D.C. once, and my wife and I were walking around the we were by the Jefferson Memorial, and I'd heard so much about Washington, D.C. being kind of a rough place, but gosh, when you're there, it seems so beautiful and nice.
Right,
but,
it is.
We actually got followed for a little bit by a pretty rough-looking character, and my wife was with me, you know, and I'll tell you, man, I swear to God, Nathan, the hairs on the back of my neck stood up, and I could tell, like, wow, this guy's, you know, he's following me.
Yeah.
And Tani and I were kind of, I think she was maybe like 15 yards ahead of me, and I think he was kind of going after her, and then, so I quickly caught up to her, and I didn't have a gun on me because it. At the time, Washington D.C. was illegal to own or to carry a handgun in that I guess it's called a district, which of course was recently overturned by the Supreme Court. But I did have a knife with me, and I'll tell you, man, I had my knife in my right hand and in the fighting position. I was ready to go, but as soon as those hairs on the back of my neck stood up, and I just, you know, engaged him with my eyes and. Gave him that 1,000-yard stare that pretty much said, you know, man, you don't want to mess with this.
He
immediately disengaged and took off. So.
Wow.
Yeah.
So there's one way to let somebody know real quick, like, you know, that you're aware of what's about to happen.
Oh yeah, and I mean, he never saw my weapon or anything, but he saw my eyes. He saw the look in my eyes, and you know. So.
Realize it wasn't going to be worth the trouble. If that's in fact, which sounds like, man, yeah, that's, and your wife was with you too. So imagine that was really freaky.
Oh yeah, it really was freaky. And honestly, the adrenaline dump was much more, it was much more powerful than I'd expected. It was actually the first adrenaline dump that I experienced that came on as a surprise. It was very,
wow.
Very intense. this is only a couple of years ago.
Oh man, yeah, I could imagine. I mean, and having someone with you that you really care about too probably even makes it, you know, twice as intense because you're. But I guess that even increases your focus because you know, like, all right, I gotta protect, you know, whoever's with me.
Right.
Well, you mentioned handgun a second ago, so I want to ask you a little bit about that too. And this is more because I don't even know. Like, how many good guys are out there carrying handguns, like, legally? Like, I live in Texas, so I know they're everywhere. But, I mean, like, I couldn't tell one way or the other.
Yeah, that's, you know, the whole armed citizen movement, if you will, and that's really what it is, a movement, because only, you know, less than 12 years ago, there was no such thing as a permit to carry a concealed weapon.
Mm-hmm.
There's an amazing amount of people that do just that, but the thing is that most people are very quiet about it because the whole idea is for it to be, you know, concealed and that nobody knows about it. And I mean, there's over 6 million Americans right now in the United States that have concealed weapons permits, and the beauty of that is that, you know, when criminals know that a fair percentage of the general population are carrying guns, it has a tremendous deterrent effect because, you know, they could look at your average Joe Schmo and he may look like a victim, at least as far as they know, but he, you know, he could be carrying a tool that could kill him instantly. So So
yeah, that's scary.
So yeah, I mean it's really, you know, a handgun, and you know, unfortunately a handgun is just a simple tool that's been vilified by so many people. But it, really, it's a handgun is just like a hammer, you know, or any other tool. It's just a but it's actually much it's very effective as a force equalizer. I mean, most of the members of the United States Concealed Carry Association are baby boomer age people who need something to level the playing field, and a handgun is hands down the most effective tool for that. We have many women that are members because you know, women are less strong physically, and again, you know, a handgun is a very efficient, portable tool that can be carried anywhere, that can instantly strike fear into the heart of even the most vicious impulse criminals, because that's another thing that the criminals understand, is they understand the language of violence. And
right.
You know, you point a gun at a bad guy and they know exactly what could happen.
Right, yeah, I guess it leaves no room for questions.
Exactly, yeah. And I mean, there are just millions of crimes that are stopped every year just by the brandishing of a weapon. And of course, even when reported, the media never pick up on that, because they don't want to report that, because that just underscores the value of armed citizens. So yeah, and you know, it's you know, our organization, you know, we've been doing this for 5 years now, and so I really get to know the people, and it's just an amazingly responsible group of people. The kind of people that, you know, the good guys that want to carry guns are truly salt of the earth good people.
And they're just, I mean, purely like I probably would imagine like 99% of them never even ever pull out their gun, like in a situation.
Exactly, yeah. And they never will have to. But they're the kind of people that, for whatever reason, they have that mentality that there's nothing wrong with being prepared. You know, they're the people that wear seatbelts and buy insurance and you know, don't drink milk after the seventh day.
Right.
Because it might make them sick.
Might make them sick. So it's all about preparedness. Now, you and I were talking previously one time, and I think you told me like the top three states for actually having concealed handguns. What were those? I'm trying to remember.
Yeah, the top three states are number one state, believe it or not, is California.
Really?
Hard to believe, because most people think of California and they think of you know, very extreme left wing type politics, but that really is just centric around San Francisco, Sacramento, and Los Angeles.
Okay.
Number two is Texas, and number three is Florida.
Okay. Well. Yeah, I figured Texas would fall in there somewhere. There's a lot of people here. I guess in California as well. So yeah, but the California one, and I did remember that one when you told me first. That one just surprised me then. It's still thinking, I was like, well, it makes sense when you really think about it. But at the same time, you're like, wow, didn't expect that one. Now what if someone, you know, say someone want, you know, actually did want to get a handgun? You know, what's the most important thing that they need to do to know? You know, and also be responsible about it, because, you know, clearly this is something that, you know, people need to be extremely responsible with.
Yeah, unfortunately the whole handgun thing, because firearms are kind of vilified in some of the mainstream aspects of our society, there's not a tremendous amount of information to just be able to tap into and research. And
uh-huh.
You know, when you go to your typical gun store, you know, and unfortunately, I hate, you know, if there's any gun store owners listening to this, I apologize in advance. I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about the other gun store owners. it's kind of hard to get good, unbiased information from a gun store. It just is. I mean, and so I would highly recommend that you do some good online research and learn from. I mean, there's a tremendous amount of good online resources. Little, somewhat underground because of the nature, but you can come to our website. We have a ton of great information.
Tell everybody what your URL is again, real quick.
For the association, it's usconcealedcarry.com, and we actually have a free weekly email newsletter there's just a tremendous amount of information for people that are interested in becoming an armed citizen and being able to protect their families that way. But you know, the first decision is to you know, figure out whether you want to, you know, exactly the caliber of handgun that you want to carry, and whether you want to carry a semi-automatic pistol or a revolver. And you know, those three levels of decision are, quite frankly, they're extremely complex. And I mean, honestly, I could probably talk for hours just about that single subject. But if your listeners go to our website, we have and when they sign up for our free weekly newsletter, we have this 12-part document that they'll get called the Armed Citizen Solution. That is, I personally wrote it, and it goes through almost everything that I just talked about, and will really help a person to at least understand what they're getting into. Because that's the other drawback, Nathan, is that, you know, all these, you know, guns and all their accessories, they're pretty expensive. So,
right, yeah, that's
so
true.
You can't just, like, you know, buy five or six guns and pick your favorite one.
right.
So.
Okay, so there's obviously some information that that someone would need to go to you know, kind of approach that decision as far as, like, you know, what they would actually buy, you know, and kind of how to go about doing that. What about, like, what are some of the other things that they need to be aware of and, like, you know, do, like, you know, whether it's, I guess, you know, so let's say they say someone went out and they got a gun, you know, what else should they do to really, you know, to be a responsible armed, you know, citizen?
Sure, yeah. Well, the next thing they have to decide is whether or not they're going to take that big step of carrying it on their person on a regular basis. And if that's the case, every state is different. Every state has concealed carry laws that are slightly different. And but there's a lot. I mean, if you go to our website again, we've got links to every single state's resources in terms of how you go and get your concealed carry permit, whether it's Texas or Florida, mm-hmm. or Michigan, etc. And then now, once you've made that decision, you're going to have to go through some training based on your state, but it's going to be a very cursory amount of training. And probably the most important thing for a person, especially if they're relatively new to firearms, is, you know, you want to take as much professional training as you can, because even though, like I mentioned before, a gun is simply a tool, it's also a tool that can be very deadly when used. So you really want to know what you're doing. And you know, lucky for us, there's a tremendous amount of extremely qualified instructors who can give you an amazing amount of education at an unbelievably low price. I'm not sure why, but for whatever reason, firearms instructors don't charge much money. you can go to, you know, 3 and 4 day all day firearms training courses for like less than $500.
Wow,
this is like, you know, all day type things. It's ridiculous. There's a website that has a good resource for training. It's called carryinstructor.org.
Okay,
it's a great place for finding instructors in your area. So, you know, really the professional instruction is by far the most critical aspect. And also what you'll find is you'll find that instructors will give you a lot of good insight and help you with that firearm selection. So oftentimes I'll recommend to people, you know, just borrow a gun from a person, get some instruction, and then learn from that instructor. After 2 or 3 days, you know, you'll learn so much in terms of what type of gun you like. It'll really help you make that decision.
Well, that's interesting. That actually makes a lot of sense.
Yep.
So I imagine that's a kind of a very personal, you know, thing based on just kind of, I get, you know, just the way you would hold a gun or, you know, the way you shoot, I would imagine.
Yeah, and it, you know, the size of your hand, the grip strength that you have. I mean, even the length of your fingers. I mean, it's very, very different. And there's literally hundreds and hundreds of different models of handguns, and they're all just a little bit different.
Okay.
So.
Yeah, absolutely. One more question I just want to ask, and this is one that I'm sure a lot of people are thinking of or have thought of in the past, you know, or maybe have already addressed if they currently have a handgun. I mean, how do you approach, you know, keeping a gun, like, safely, like, in your house so that, like, it doesn't fall into the wrong hands, like, you know, like a child or, you know, something like that?
That's a great, great point. There's a tremendous amount of really high-quality products on the market now. You know, everything from your old standby basic gigantic safe in the basement that you bolt to the concrete floor, like a fire safe.
Uh-huh.
You know, there's, you know, everybody ought to have one of those.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess I've actually been surprised. There's more than a few people I know that actually have safes like that, and a lot of them, I don't know whether they have guns in there or not, but I know that they keep a lot of other, like, you know, personal documents in those that they don't want to lose. That's interesting.
Yeah, it's a handy little thing to have. but there are also a lot of neat products, Nathan, in-wall safes that where I would recommend for a person if they're going to use the firearm in their home for self-defense. And it sounds like it's a lot of work, but it's really not that bad. You just find a wall in your house that doesn't have any electrical, et cetera, in it, and these safes are designed, they're made for 16-inch on center studs, and you essentially bolt the thing so that it winds up being flush with your wall, and it has a lot of times there'll be like keypad finger activated or even like fingerprint activated lock mechanisms that can instantly open up the safe for pretty quick access. So
wow.
There's really no excuse I shouldn't say there's no excuse, but it's really not, it's not very difficult to keep your firearms in a locked situation when they're not on your person.
Where basically the only person that's going to get access to them is you.
Exactly. Yep.
Got it. Okay. Well, that's definitely very helpful.
Nathan, can I interject one quick thing here?
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm sorry. Back on the safe thing. You can have as many different, you know, locks and boxes and lock boxes, as Al Gore used to say,
right,
in your house to put your guns in, but there's nothing. If you have kids in the house, you have to sit them down at the kitchen table with your guns, let them hold them, and teach them what they will do. Because if you don't teach them to respect the power of the firearm, they'll get in those boxes. You'd be amazed at. I mean, they'll guess the combinations. And,
right.
And, I mean, that is the ultimate gun safety, to actually teach your children to respect and to fear, have a healthy fear for guns. I cannot say that enough. And the neat thing about doing that is that insulates and protects them when they go to other people's house whose parents weren't smart enough to teach them about that. So, you know, when they go over to little Johnny's house, says, hey, Billy, look at my dad's .44 Magnum revolver that he keeps loaded under his pillow.
Yeah,
so your kid's going to be smart to say, hey, put that thing down, man. It's going to blow your head off. So, anyway, enough of the safety stuff, but, I mean...
Yeah, no, I mean, that's a very real concern. I mean, I grew up, you know, in a family of like my grandfather, all my uncles were all hunters, and my dad was also, and you know, it's funny you mentioned that. My dad actually, you know, had that conversation with me, like, you know, taught me about those things very, very early. Fortunately, I never went over to a friend's house where a handgun was brought out or anything like that, so I didn't have to deal with that, but I remember, like, from that day forward, like, it's true. I remember I did not go, you know, foraging for his weaponry and trying to hunt that stuff down. So that's a really good point. So, Tim, I definitely think what you just said is, you know, really, really important. And I can speak from my own experience that, I grew up in a family with a father who was a hunter, and, you know, my grandfather was a hunter, and all my uncles, and, you know, so grew up around, you know, guns, and my dad actually did sit down with me when I was pretty young and did something very similar. It wasn't at the kitchen table. It was actually out at some family property where we were having a family event, and there was, you know, a lot of people were going to be hunting in there, so there's lots of guns. And so I got that speech very young, and you know, I can, you know, speak, you know, from experience that it definitely kept me from going and foraging through my dad's closet and, you know, like trying to find the guns that I knew that were there. Cause, you know, kids are extremely curious and I know I was, so I'm really glad that you brought that up. Cause I think that's anybody that is currently doing it or is considering it, you know, you definitely want to have that, keep that in mind.
Yep. Good stuff, Nathan. I agree.
So, man, well, I think we have covered it all. I do want to encourage people, you know, if this is something that you are interested in or you'd like to learn more about Tim in United States Concealed Carry, what was the URL again, Tim?
URL is www.usconcealedcarry.com.
Okay, so that's where you're going to want to go. I want to thank Tim. Thank you very much for, you know, spending the time with us and the listeners today for this 3X interrogation. was very educational for me, as I'm sure it was for everybody else. And like I said, man, I think we covered all everything from, you know, being a man and serve and protect, all that it is to be a guy.
Nathan, I really enjoyed the combo, man.
Awesome. Well, everybody, I will also include a link below this interview. So if you just want to click on that and follow it to Tim's website, and you'll be able to check out United States Concealed Carry Association. This is Nathan Hopkins, and this has been another 3X Interrogation. Thank you very much.